Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Jewel Ornament of Liberation, Chapter 3, The Spiritual Friend, by Lama Cathy Wesley. Once we have established the wish to accomplish spiritual awakening for the benefit of all beings, we need to find a spiritual guide who will help us on the path. Lama Cathy describes the best kinds of spiritual teachers and how we can discover our teacher. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
It's great to see everybody this morning. Hello. I appreciate you coming. So we'll start this morning's talk on the jewel ornament of liberation. We'll start it with a short prayer. This prayer is going to be the four-line refuge prayer that we use at the KTC, and we'll recite it one time in Tibetan and then one time in English. If you're familiar with the prayer, you can recite it along, but if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can join it in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to the benefit of sentient beings. O Sanje Chudang Suchi Chonamna Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Pe Sunam Ki Drola Pinshir Sanje Truparsho. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all suffering beings. Semchen tamje dewatan tewe kyutan tempar gyuchit tungatang dunyaki kyutan trewa chuchik dunyamebe tewa tambatam hendrawa chuchik Nerin Chandan Yidan Trawe Tam Yen Chimpulan Nepa Jurichi. May all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free from attachment and aversion to those considered near or far. O Palin Savilama Rimboche Tagi Chiwar Pede Ten Chula Kadrin Jembo Ganeche Sunte Kusun Tugging Utrup Sal to Soul. Okay, thanks very much. Okay, so this is the third installment in the series that we're doing on Trungpa Rinpoche's book. Jay Gampopa's Jewel Ornament of Liberation. This is a commentary by the modern master, Trungpa Rinpoche, on an older classic text. It's a doorstop book that was written in the, 12th century, by 11th or 12th century. Yeah, it looks like 12th century, by Gampopa. This is the root text. And it's a nice heavy book if you'd like to have some winter reading, you know. But meanwhile, Trungpa Rinpoche has written a really accessible book that walks us through the most important points of Gampopa's lecture and helps us to connect to the teachings that Gampopa is presenting. In the original text, the root text, Gampopa, as the word ornament implies, uses lots and lots and lots of quotations from scripture to support the path that he is teaching. As you know from our first lecture on this series, Gampopa was an incredibly special master who was a disciple of the Tibetan yogi Milarepa and was himself a physician and a monastic. And he joined together the two streams of mind training the line training lineages and the gradual path lineages of the Kadampa with the esoteric practices of the Kaju and created the modern Kaju lineage as we know it today. So the reason that Gampopa wrote this book was because it's frequently important for people who are studying a new subject, especially if they are new to Buddhism. It's important to have a text that gives all of the main points in a specific order. And this is why this is called a Lam Rim. L-A-M means path. Rim means gradual. That's why this is called a Lam Rim text or a gradual path text, in that it shows how a person progresses in their Dharma practice from the beginning of their path to the conclusion of their path. And if you saw what was going on in chapter one and chapter two, we discussed the cause of enlightenment, which is the fact that we all have Buddha nature. We all have the potential to become Buddhas. We all have a mind, and that mind can gradually come to know itself and to realize its own nature. And so the cause for Buddhahood is already within us. The cause, which is our Buddha nature, our mind that can be transformed by our practice. So we already talked about the cause. And then after that, we talked about the basis. In the next chapter, we talked about the basis for our practice of Dharma, which is the fact that even though we have Buddha nature, we may not be able to bring it to realization because we don't possess the necessary freedom and resources in our life to actually pursue Dharma. And that's why the basis, even though the cause for our Buddhahood in the future is Buddha nature, the basis for it is the fact that we have a precious human life. And in the last chapter, we spoke about the freedom that we have as human beings to practice and study the Dharma and the resources that we have. We have our faculties, we have teachers who are teaching the Dharma, and so on. We have all of the freedoms and resources that are needed in order to practice. So now we are going to talk about the next part of the Buddhist, of the Dharma path, which is the spiritual friend. This is chapter three. In chapter three, he talks about, Gampopa introduces the idea of the Geiwei Shinyan. And Geiwei means G-E-W-E, and I think Geiwei or G-E-W-A-Y, however you would like to spell it. Geiwei means, it has two meanings. One is happiness, and then the other is virtue. And then Shinyan, which I'm going to spell S-H-I-N-Y, E-N, Shinyan. I'm going to spell it that way. It may not be the proper way, but it's the best way I can think of right now. Geiwei Shinyan, which means virtuous. That's Geiwei. Geiwei is virtuous. Shinyan is friend, the virtuous friend. The Geiwei Shinyan or the Geishe, is the person who is our spiritual friend and leads us on the path. Now, why do we need a spiritual friend? Why do we need a guide along the path? Trungpa Rinpoche in his third chapter says that because we have lived many, many lifetimes in the past, in fact, countless lifetimes in the past, during which we didn't achieve Buddhahood. Kempo Rinpoche used to joke around a little bit about it. He said, you know, we're kind of the left behind people. All of the people who lived at the time of the Buddha, many of them attained enlightenment. And we're sort of the ones that got left over because we didn't have the karma to be reborn with the Buddha and get the teachings directly from the Buddha. So we're kind of left behind. Of course, he didn't have any idea of what that meant in Western Christian terms. But in any case, he said, we're the people who didn't get enlightened at the time of the Buddha. So now we have to achieve enlightenment ourselves. And so we use the teachings of the Buddha, which he left for us, but we have not attained enlightenment yet, which means that we might have some confusion on board. In other words, the reason we haven't attained Buddhahood up to this time is that our karma wasn't enough for us to be born at the time of the Buddha. But we have been born in a Buddhist flavored society, and we've been exposed to Buddhism through our education, and we have a lot of resources to look to learn about Buddhism. But we've also, at the same time, even though we've had all, on the one hand, we've had all of these opportunities to learn about Buddhism through education, we also have a lot of bad habits. And the bad habits that we have accumulated from previous lifetimes are holding us back. They make us think that worldly life might be better than Dharma, and that by doing worldly life, we might get some kind of happiness that might last. And so we're deceived by our bad habits into thinking that Dharma is a nice hobby, but not a way of life, and that looking for name, fame, money, and so forth is probably the better way to go. So this is why we need guidance, because right now we've been headed in the wrong direction. We have this amazing Buddha nature and this amazing precious human birth, but we need someone to sort of nudge us, to move us gradually toward doing virtue and setting aside the problems and the bad habits that we've been in since beginningless time. And so this is why we need the spiritual friend. Kempo Karta Rinpoche, in one of his teachings, said, "The Buddha nature is inside every being, but we're unaware of it, which is why we need the spiritual friend." Because the traditional Tibetan example of the Buddha nature is a treasure that is hidden in the ground beneath a house. And in the house lives a poverty-stricken family who doesn't know that beneath the floor of their house, there is a treasure buried that could resolve all of their needs and all of their problems. They don't know it until someone comes, knocks at the door and says, "Excuse me, you have a treasure beneath your house, and I will show you where to dig to find it." So in this example, we are the person who's living in only in a potentiated situation. Our Buddha nature is below the surface. We can't see it. And so the teacher comes, knocks on our door and says, "By the way, you have Buddha nature and I'll help you find it." And so the treasure is below the ground in our house, but the teacher has to come to tell us where to dig. So this is the value of of knowing the spiritual friend. Then Gampopa gives three reasons why we need a spiritual friend. The first reason comes from scriptures. And he quotes from the Condensed Perfection of Wisdom Sutra that says that if we have, he says, the first one says, "The noble disciple who has respect for the teacher should always attend the wise teacher, because one receives good qualities from them." So the text is saying that a good disciple needs to have the assistance of a good teacher, and a good teacher must have all of the qualities and also some qualities from their practice and realization. If we rely on a good teacher who has all of the qualities, then it will be of great benefit. It will provide the opportunity to develop and increase one's own qualities through this relationship. When the teacher teaches us the Dharma and we practice it, we gradually relinquish our bad habits, take hold of good habits, and saturate our being with virtue and wisdom. And when we saturate our being with virtue and wisdom, we gradually move away from bad habits and toward good habits and then toward awakening. So this was spoken of by the Buddha himself in his scriptures. So that's the first reason, is that we need the teacher to develop our own qualities. The second example is given through logic. And logic tells us that when we are in an unfamiliar place, if we're in an unfamiliar locale, we need to have a guide who will lead us through the dangers of the land. So the second example is that since we don't know where we're going in Buddhism, since we don't know what problems lie along the sides of our Dharma path, we need the teacher to help us, to help guide us away from the pitfalls and toward the goal. The third reason, or the third illustration, I guess it's not reason, but the third illustration of the need for a teacher are a set of examples that's given by Gampopa in his book. Trungpa Rinpoche, in his commentary, walks us through each of these examples. He says, the example of the traveler, the example of the escort for the traveler, and so forth. So we are a traveler going to Buddhahood, but we have all kinds of problems, the same problems that a worldly traveler would have if they were going to a foreign land. They might take a mistaken path. They might take an incredibly long and unnecessary path. They may actually take a most difficult and path filled with hardship. And so a teacher is like the escort that takes us toward the unmistaken path, toward the shortest path, and toward the easiest path. Saying that the escort is sometimes necessary to protect us against robbers and thieves on our journey. And so he explains that in the examples of Gampopa, there are inner robbers and outer robbers. The outer robbers are people who spark our three mental poisons. Do you remember the three mental poisons that the Buddha said keeps our samsara going? Ignorance, attachment, and aversion. So these ignorance, attachment, and aversion are our three mental poisons. Those are the inner robbers. The outer robbers are people who provoke us into exercising our three poisons. Those are the outer robbers, are the people who spur us into negative action. And then the inner robbers are the thoughts of ignorance, attachment, and aversion that keep us busy and off the path. Therefore, the teacher will help to escort us through these dangers by telling us the dangers are there and giving us antidotes to take when we fall into the pitfalls on our journey. Then the other example that is given by Gampopa and by Trungpa Rinpoche is the boat person, the boatman or boatwoman, the boat person who puts us in the boat and takes us across the water to our destination. As I mentioned earlier in these talks, the term paramita, P-A-R-A-M-I-T-A, paramita, means other shore. Because samsara is sometimes this world of cyclic existence and suffering that the Buddha taught us about. This world of samsara is sometimes likened to a great lake or a great river or great ocean. And that the Dharma is our boat that takes us across the water to the other shore, which is Buddhahood. So from our confusion to Buddhahood is a journey that is compared to a boat journey. So the boatman or the boat person in this example is the teacher who puts us in the boat and carries us safely to the other shore of Buddhahood. And so that's a little bit about the examples of a teacher and also why we need one. In the next part of his exposition, Gampopa and Trungpa Rinpoche talk about the types of spiritual friend, the types of Gewe Shinyin. And there are three types that are described in the book. And these are, and he says that the more progress we make toward wisdom and virtue, more different types of teachers we can associate with. I'm going to use some big words here, so I'm going to see if I can type them in the chat. The first of these is the Nirmanakaya, and that's a big word, so I had to actually type it out first so that I could spell it out. My fingers know how to spell it, but my brain doesn't. N as in Nancy, I, R, M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, A, K as in Kathy, A, Y, A. Nirmana Kaya. The Nirmana Kaya, Nirmana is it has the connotation of form, and Kaya means body. So that's been put in chat for you. Nirmana, oh, look, hey, autocorrect gave me Nirvana. That's pretty cool. I got Nirvana from autocorrect. The word should be Nir, N-I-R-M-A-N-A. Now, I'm going to disable autocorrect. See if we can get it right. There we go, Nirmana. And then Kaya is body. Okay, there we go. The Nirmana Kaya is considered to be the form body of an awakened being. An example of this would be the Buddha Shakyamuni. Was called a Nirmanakaya Buddha. In other words, he was a Buddha who appeared in this world among humans so that we could connect with him and receive his teachings. So Gampopa, in his Jewel Ornament of Liberation, says the Nirmanakaya Buddha, like the historical Buddha Shakyamuni, the very best. It's a really, if you have a lot of really, really good karma, then and you're an awakened being, perhaps even yourself, you can contact and receive teachings from the Nirmanakaya. However, if you don't have that kind of karma, you might have the karma to receive teachings from the Sambhogakaya Buddhas, who are on the Bhumis, and these are the qualities. The body of awakened qualities. So the Sambhogakaya Buddhas, these are beings who are on the levels or bhumis of awakening. And we might actually, if we're not able to receive, if we don't have the karma to receive teachings from a fully awakened Buddha, then the very next thing we're going to receive, possible to receive teachings from, would be the next best. Would be the Sambhogakaya, a partially awakened bodhisattva, because they're called Sambhogakaya because they have begun to manifest their Buddha qualities, but they're not fully enlightened yet. So wouldn't that be great to have a fully awakened Buddha as our teacher? That would be wonderful. But if we can't have that, the next best, according to Gampopa, is the Sambhogakaya, a partially awakened bodhisattva. That's the second best kind of teacher to have. Now, the third type of teacher, you're not going to believe this one, but the third type of teacher spoken of in Jewel Ornament of Liberation is the ordinary being. Yes, the ordinary unenlightened person. And this is a person who has, who may have done some practice and learned some dharma, but they're not awakened. And so that's the third best. Now, Gampopa in his book says, now, which of these is the most excellent and most kind? And he says, of course, it's the ordinary being. And the reason he says the ordinary being is the most kind and most excellent of these three kinds of teachers is because since we are unenlightened beings and we don't have a lot of what is called pure karma, we don't have enough pure karma to see the Nirmanakaya. We don't have enough pure karma to see the Sambhogakaya, but we have plenty of karma to see ordinary beings. And therefore, the ordinary beings who meet us right here, where we are. They meet us, they come to meet us where we are, right here in samsara. The ordinary being is the most kind and most excellent, according to Gampopa, because they are here in samsara with us. And so they appear in a form that we can understand. They appear in a form that we can comprehend, that we can connect with, and therefore their teachings are actually the most important ones for us because they are the ones who get us started on the Buddhist path. So I thought that was a very interesting progression for Gampopa to start by saying, oh yes, the best teacher is a fully awakened Buddha. Next best teacher is a partially awakened bodhisattva, but kind of the best for us right now where we are is an ordinary being. So I thought that was pretty cool. I didn't see that coming exactly. Anyhow, then gotta grab my notes. There are two characteristics that a teacher needs to have, whether they are of one type or another. There are two main characteristics that teachers need to have. The first is that they have to be knowledgeable. In other words, they have to know the Dharma and know it correctly. And then the second is that they need to be reliable. Now, there's a couple different ways to talk about this. Trungpa Rinpoche uses the word, they have to have knowledge and have reliability. And in order to explain this, I guess I have to talk a little bit about some of the teachings in the classic presentation of jewel ornament. The knowledge part we can understand, that a person who gives Dharma teaching has to know what they're talking about. So that's a given. We have to have that. But what does this reliability mean? And in Gampopa's longer exposition of this, he explains it as a person who has, what's the right word? They have a compassionate attitude and patience. So in other words, to be a reliable teacher, you have to have patience and compassion. So in this way, when students ask questions, the best teacher is one who is patient with the questions and compassionate in their answers. And so these are the characteristics that teachers should have. Number one, they should be knowledgeable. And this also could include another quality that Gampopa talks about in the longer text. It would be great if they had some spiritual qualities, had developed some spiritual qualities through their own practice. So if they had some spiritual qualities and they have learning and have knowledge, that's really good. But they also need to have compassion and patience. So that's the two characteristics that teachers need to have. But then Gampopa doesn't stop by talking about the qualities of teachers. He also talks about how a student should relate to the teacher. The student should relate to the teacher in three ways: through respect, through, he uses the word veneration here, which will need some explanation. Respect, veneration, and practice. Respect, veneration, and practice. This is how students relate to teachers. Respect means that we keep a respectful attitude in our mind for the teacher's learning, and we keep respect in our mind for the teacher's practice, that the teacher has done some kind of practice in order to move along the Dharma path themselves. So in other words, we have respect for the teacher's learning and any qualities that they of patience and compassion that they may have. The second of these is veneration. Veneration is a little bit, it's a kind of a hard word for those of us in America to think about, because we stopped curtsying to royalty 240 years ago. So we don't really understand the idea of treating someone with that level of respect, that we would actually honor their example and honor their presence in our life. So one time I was talking with a Tibetan about this, and they said something really important, and that was we should treat our teachers the same way we would teach our beloved family members, such as our elderly grandparents, great-grandparents, and so on. We should treat the teachers with the same kindness, deference, and respect that we would show to the elders in our family. And I think that is a good way of talking about veneration without it becoming problematic. And the third way that a student can and should relate to the teacher is through practicing, through doing their Dharma practice. If a person respects their teacher, venerates their teacher, but doesn't practice what the teacher gave them, it's somehow incomplete. Their following of the teacher is somehow incomplete. And so the very best thing that we can do for our teachers is to practice what they give us. I remember one time, one of my lamas said that if we practice what the teacher gives us, it actually helps the teacher themselves to have longevity and good health. So doing our practice helps the teacher's longevity and health, and it also helps the Dharma, and it also helps us. So by doing practice, in fact, Kempo Karthu Rinpoche used to say that if you want to give your teacher a gift, that's wonderful. But the very best gift that you can give to your teacher is your practice. And then that is the best way to relate to a spiritual friend, through respect, through veneration, and then through your own practice. Now, I see from the time that we're at the top of the hour, which means we have another 25 minutes or so together. And I have a little bit more material I want to present that was not in the book. But before I do that, I want to see what kind of discussion we might have here. And if anybody has questions about what we've talked about already, if you need something repeated or if you need an illustration or something, you can type it in chat so everyone can see. Or you can unmute your microphone and then ask a question. I see we already have one in chat. Let me handle a couple questions in chat first, and then I'll get to the audio. How do we know who has achieved some of the Bhumi levels? Maybe that is not the point, but we should know the teachers fit those main qualities. Yes, I agree with you that, in fact, Kempo Karthu Rinpoche said one time that we may be seeing a being who is a bodhisattva, but they're in disguise. And they may look really ordinary. So he said we should really treat everybody with kindness and respect because we don't know who the bodhisattvas among us might be. Now, I know that's not a direct answer to your question, but it does appear from my point of view that it could be some food for thought for your question. And I think that what he's getting at is for us to be reborn in the presence of a fully awakened Buddha, which is the Nirmanakaya, it takes a lot of good karma for us to be reborn in the presence of a Nirmanakaya Buddha. So we don't have that amount of good karma just yet. But we also don't have the karma to be reborn in the presence of a partially awakened bodhisattva. But we definitely have the karma to encounter the ordinary beings who embody the Dharma to the best of their ability. Now, this isn't to say that there aren't Buddhas and Bodhisattvas walking among us. There very well could be, because that was, I think, to me, the point that I took from Kempo Karthu Rinpoche's statement that we have to treat everyone with respect because we don't know if there are Buddhas and Bodhisattvas walking among us. So we need to treat everybody with some kind of respect. But I know that doesn't directly answer your question, but what I would say is if we look at the activity of beings who are widely considered to be bodhisattvas on the Bhumis, which based on the information that we have, the Jawang Karmapas, the 16, now 17 Karmapas, who were the embodiment of all of the Buddha's activity, Karmapa. Karma means like the activity of a Buddha in this sense, and pa means person. So the Karmapas, this generation after generation lineage of teachers, are considered to be high-level bodhisattvas, and yet they appear in human form for our benefit. So we can think of that kind of person as being a Buddha or bodhisattva. But also, we have the example of Kempo Karthu Rinpoche, who was born in the same year as the 16th Karmapa and died a number of years later, after the 16th Karmapa, on the same day as the Karmapa passed away. And he exemplified so many enlightened qualities, wisdom, endless compassion, endless patience. I think that he was the epitome of the Geiwei Xianyan, the spiritual friend or the virtuous friend. So those of us who heard about him, met him, knew him, interacted with him, I think that we would all feel that his qualities of endless patience and endless compassion qualify him in our mind as the Bodhisattva on the Bumi. So I'm awfully sorry. I don't know precisely how to tell beyond that, but we can ask one of the lamas when we get a chance. The next question in chat is, what do the Bumis mean in relation to the Sambhogakaya and Bodhisattva teacher? This will be discussed later in the book in detail. Let's go all the way back here to, okay. This will be in the chapter entitled The Method, Aspects of the Five Paths. And I'm sorry, no, it's the, chapter 19, The Levels of the Path. It'll be spoken about in detail there. But for now, what I can say is that the word Bhumi is a Sanskrit word, and it means a level, but it also can mean earth or ground. The Tibetan word for it is sa. Sa is the Tibetan word for level or Bhumi. There are 10 in some of the Mahayana sutras. The Mahayana sutras speak about 10 bodhisattva levels. And I'll get to that in a second. And in the tantras, they talk about 13. So I get a little confused about the 10 and the 13, but let's just talk about the first. Let's just talk about the first, which is one I know something about. When we were in three-year retreat, Kempo Rinpoche spoke to us about the first Bhumi and how the first level of bodhisattva awakening, which is called the arriving at the path of seeing. The path of seeing means that we have arrived at, we see our mind in a way we never saw it before. And that we experience our mind in a way we never experienced it before, as openness, wisdom, compassion, and so on. And Kempo Karth Rinpoche said, I can't tell you what it's like, but you'll know when you get there. But what he did say was that when a person, he said, it will happen in a one session of meditation. He said, you'll sit down to your meditation session as an ordinary being, and that during that meditation session, you'll enter into a deep meditative absorption during which you will see the nature of mind directly, not through inference and not through any kind of intellectual inference, but you will actually see the nature of your mind directly. And he said, this will cause your experience of your mind and of all the world to change radically. And he said, and then after that, you will then gradually progress so that that realization becomes wider and wider and wider and permeates more and more and more of your experience. He says, at first it will be relegated to your meditation periods, but then gradually it will begin to merge with the rest of your experience of life. And so in that way, he said, the first Bhumi is actually, for us, it's the most important one. It's the most important one for us because it's the first one we could encounter. And so it's important to know about it. And what Rinpoche said was that he said it happens in a moment of meditation. He said, but it doesn't happen by accident. He said, so you have to have a teacher and train with a teacher, and then you'll learn the methods of meditation and learn all the things you need to know to arrive at that level of awakening. Let's see here. The next question. Nirmanakaya Buddhas are very rare. Is that correct? You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'd like to think that they're not super rare, but it is not common for there to be many fully awakened beings, although it is said that there, well, now that I think of it, if we think about the prayers that Shantideva wrote at the beginning of the Way of the Bodhisattva, he talks about countless. He says there are countless Buddhas in countless realms all throughout the universe. So he says there are countless Buddhas. But there's a difference between the Nirmanakaya and something called the Supreme Nirmanakaya. Nirmanakaya. The Supreme Nirmanakaya is, it does appear to be rare, because the Supreme Nirmanakaya is like the Buddha Shakyamuni, who lived in our era and lived this demonstration life, showing us how to attain awakening. And so, it is said that all the Supreme Nirmanakayas will appear in our world, be born and achieve enlightenment in India, in Bodh Gaya, and so on. So, but I don't know much about that, because we'd have to really talk to the regulations about Supreme Nirmanakayas and all the descriptions. So, but that's what I'm told, is that the Supreme Nirmanakaya is rare. There will be 1,000 of them in this fortunate eon. The Buddha Shakyamuni, I believe, was the fourth, but he was either the third or the fourth in this fortunate aeon. So there will be 1,000 Supreme Nirmanakayas in our era here. But I can't say more than that, except that I heard the teaching said about that. And it looks like that's the end of the chat questions. So if anybody has an audio question, you can unmute and ask your question.
I have a question. You give us the definition of Nirmanakaya, Samboyakaya. And what about the third kind? Are they the Dharmakaya?
Oh, yeah, the Dharmakaya. Yeah, that's right. Believe it or not, it's not mentioned in this context, because it's not one of the three kinds of teachers, right? The Dharmakaya isn't given as one of the three kinds of teachers. But Dharmakaya, thank you for asking about it, is the enlightened mind of the Buddha, or the awakened mind. Okay, so I read a prayer that explained this once, that it says, the Dharmakaya, through compassion, manifests, did I spell that right? Yeah. As the two kayas of form. That's what the prayer says. The Dharmakaya, through compassion, manifests as the two kayas of form. So in other words, the Dharmakaya is the awakened mind of the Buddha, but it is not an embodiment itself. It, through compassion, appears as Nirmanakaya and appears as Sambhogakaya for the benefits of us beings. Does that help, or does that make it worse? Was that the answer to your question, or do you have another? No? Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry if that, I hope that was okay. I didn't hear whether that was an answer to your question or not. You might have spoken, but you're muted. So anyway, thanks for asking. Okay. Other questions? Okay. Well, then I'd like to share a couple of other thoughts with you before the bottom of the hour. Let's see if I can find it for you quickly. There is an article that I put on my website, lamakathy.net. And I'm going to try to bring that website up here. I don't need to share the screen. No, it doesn't look like my computer is not going to do it, I don't think. But there's an article that I wrote there based on a few teachings that I had received from various lamas, and the teaching is about how to find a teacher and how to approach a teacher. And I think my exact place, but I can type in the website. It's a www.lamacathywithak.net. And on that page, there's a little explanation about the about how a person finds a teacher. Let's see. Oh, somebody's asking a question. Could you say something about what the two kayas are? Yes. You can find more about this in the book, The Great Path of Awakening, which by Jungun Kantrol. He explains the three kayas really, really well. And in the footnotes, and I can't grab the book right now. It's in an inaccessible shelf. But the Dharmakaya is the Dharmakaya is the enlightened mind of the Buddha, and the Sambhogakaya is the body of qualities, and the Nirmanakaya is the body of form. And so the body of qualities is, if you see images of bodhisattvas like this image of Tara that's behind me, you'll see that the images are depicted as wearing silks and jewels. The silks and jewels are symbols of the qualities of awakening, wisdom, compassion, and so on. And this idea of being as being full of qualities is what the is the literal meaning of Sambhogakaya, and so this is the best I can do on short notice right now without my written references, but that the verse from the prayer says the Dharmakaya through compassion manifests as the two kayas of form, and the reason that it manifests as two kayas, the ordinary beings who are Nirmanakaya, and then also the partially enlightened bodhisattvas that are apparent to us, is because the Dharmakaya does not have embodiment, but through compassion, it manifests as the Nirmanakaya and the Sambhogakaya for beings who get to actually access and to meet. And there are several different types of Nirmanakaya, but the one that it's hard for us to meet according to the teachings of Gampopa is the supreme Nirmanakaya like the Buddha Shakyamuni. However, the word for toku or a reincarnated teacher is also Nirmanakaya. So it indicates that there are other ways the Nirmanakaya can be contacted by us. So I hope that's enough to start with. Now turning back to the article that was on the lamacathy.net. And somebody put I think it was on this one. It's in the chat, choosing a teacher. A lot of people ask me, how do I know who my teacher is? How do I know? And how am I going to find a teacher? Because it's so important. I mean, right? I mean, Gampopa, everybody is saying a teacher is important. How am I going to find one? And I've spoken to a number of Tibetan teachers about this, and one of them put it this way. They said, start by doing your practice. If you want to get a teacher, start by doing your practice. In other words, start by doing some meditation. Start by taking refuge and engendering the bodhisattva attitude. Start by accumulating merit, making offerings, and doing all of those things. Accumulate merit by studying the Dharma and being kind to yourself and others. And so that, I think, is the first thing that this teacher said we should do. Because he said, when we do our practice, we begin to create a virtuous mindset. We begin to change our mind from being an ordinary, confused being to being someone who is interested in virtue and interested in attaining enlightenment. So we're turning away from negativity and turning toward things that are positive, and we begin to condition our mind with virtuous actions. And what the teacher said to me was that when we begin to condition our minds with virtue, we become more aware of our surroundings and we become more attuned to virtue. And so in that way, we become more attuned to the teachers in our midst. And so that's why he said, start by doing your practice and then your karma will improve. And as your karma improves, then you'll meet more teachers. And from among those teachers, you will meet a few whose advice helps you. You'll begin asking advice from these teachers and their advice will help you. And these will become your branch teachers, which I thought was a really lovely idea, that these will become your branch teachers. And then he said, then from among those branch teachers will come one or two whose assistance and advice helps you the very most. And those people would become your root teachers. And so his advice was to do your practice, be patient, meet teachers, listen, practice what you learn. And then gradually, he said, finding a teacher will be an organic process that will be gradual and natural. It's not something that you should try to force, is the idea. We shouldn't force the idea of saying, I have to have a teacher, I have to have a teacher, I have to have a teacher, and then go frantically searching for one. In fact, His Eminence Thai Sitra Rinpoche was giving a teaching to us once, and he said, don't be desperate. He said, because when a person is desperate, he said, they tend to make bad choices and to make mistakes. So he said, it's better for you to move gradually and slowly and find your teacher gradually and slowly. And then as that goes, it will be a better choice and a better decision. Then there's another piece of advice I wanted to share about teachers, and that was from Kimpo Carter Rinpoche, who many people would ask him, how do I find a teacher? How do I know that I have found my teacher? And so on. And a person once wrote a letter to Kempo Rinpoche, and I had to translate. I was his secretary for that afternoon. And so I read the letter to him. And between the lines, the person who was writing the letter was sort of asking Rinpoche, are you my teacher? Can you tell me, are you my teacher? And Rinpoche caught that, just by listening to the English, he caught that question. And so he had me write this back. He said, I don't know who your teacher is going to be, was his answer. He said, I don't know. He said, but I will tell you that your teacher, you should look for three things. And it's different from the three things, by the way, that was in. So it was that interested me. He said, the teacher will, their actions will match their words, which I thought was interesting, you know, and they will be, they will have qualities such as compassion and goodness, and they will be, available to you. So let's try to use, short words to talk about this. He said, they will inspire, you will have confidence that they know what they're talking about. So that's the first, okay? So there'll be confidence. That's the first quality. You'll have confidence that they know what they're talking about. The second is trust. In other words, you are okay. You're fine to entrust yourself to their care. So it will be someone you have confidence in, someone you trust, and someone who is available to you. I mean, here's the thing. How many of us would love to have the Dalai Lama or someone like that to be, or Karmapa to be our teacher, because we've got the comfort, we definitely have the confidence that they know what they're doing, and we definitely have the trust, but then we have this availability problem. that there's very little way that we can actually relate in a day-to-day sort of way with these high masters. So these are the three qualities. Again, we'll have confidence in them, that they know what they're talking about. We'll trust. We'll be able to entrust our care to them, and that they'll also be available to us. And these characteristics are discussed, I don't know if they're discussed in full in the teacher article or not, but usually when I talk about finding a teacher, I'll talk about these two things: the branch teachers and root teachers, and how the process is organic, and then the three characteristics of a good teacher and how we can relate to them. So let's see if there are any other questions. I see none in chat. Okay. So then we'll stop here and do a short 2-minute meditation, and then we'll dedicate our merit. Those of you who are familiar with the methods of meditation will know that sitting quietly and placing your hands palm downward on the legs is a good way of making a tripod out of your body, whether you're sitting in a chair or sitting on the floor. You begin by forming the mental motivation of meditating for the benefit of beings. And then begin by taking one deep breath, breathing out, and then allowing the breath to come and go naturally, placing your attention on the breath. And we'll just sit quietly for a couple of minutes. Okay, thank you. Appreciate your coming today for this third chapter on the Jewel Ornament class. And next week, we'll be discussing chapter 4, which is the method, which is the teachings of the spiritual friend. Now that we've found the teacher, we're going to find out about the path. So let's dedicate our merit to all sentient beings. We'll do a silent dedication. We dedicate this merit to all suffering beings. May they be free from suffering, come to happiness, and then to Buddhahood. And coming to Buddhahood, may they benefit all sentient beings endlessly. We dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you. Thanks, everyone. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.